Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 10:42 a.m. and that is on Saturday, October 27th. I'm recording 24 hours later than normal and I apologize for that, but it's due to a rather heavy travel schedule over the last week. But that has given me ample time for some consideration of markets and exactly where we are. I'm definitely going to update the long-term piece that I've been posting on a daily basis in Comment of the Day on Monday. I think that there has been sufficient change in terms of the market outlook that it is certainly time to revisit the long-term view. But let's try and answer some questions in here right now. What I find particularly interesting when we look at approximately 13 or 14 years of history on the NASDAQ 100 is that it was one of the indices that hit a new, or well, that it bottomed in 2008 and retested that low in early 2009 but did not exceed it. Well, the S&P 500 did exceed its low, and it was the NASDAQ that had one of the more impressive rebounds. It, by the time we got around to the beginning of 2011, it was at new recovery highs. It took another few years before we got back to the peak that was put in at 1999, but that is, and that also represented this bigger range that we saw in 2014 and 2015. What was particularly interesting about that point was that we had a loss of consistency. It was a bigger consolidation. One might have argued at the time that it looked like a peak, but then we had the presidential election, and there was what had contributed to the uptick in volatility and the loss of momentum had been that high yield spreads had been trending higher for a while. They started trending higher in 2014. Then we also had people starting to wonder about what the market was going to do when quantitative easing was over, and in what way was the Federal Reserve going to be raising interest rates. But then at the end of 2016, we had the presidential election, and everyone started getting really enthused about the fact, one, that you had a government that had not been particularly friendly to the market was being replaced by one that was highly friendly to the market. So that was already a big boost. But then the speculation about tax cuts. Well, we've had the tax cuts, and they have been particularly advantageous to companies, and that contributed to a significant surge on the upside. And the NASDAQ today is substantially above the peak that it was at back in 2000. So this is really a very impressive bull market that we've seen since the end of 2008. And now the question is whether it's going to continue to trend higher or whether we are in for a more volatile period. So let's zoom in on just the last 10 years, because it's been reasonably consistent. We did have the wobble in 2015 and 2016, and that was a really quite a significant trend in consistency. But then the pace of the advance got really consistent again between 2016 and the beginning of this year. And by and large, when we think about the psychological perception stages of major bull and bear markets, we do anticipate that the trend should get more consistent because of the way that it just takes time to convince people that, or I guess the other way of thinking, it takes time for people to accept the bullish hypothesis. If you had been trying to convince people in March of 2009 that the NASDAQ 100 would exceed its 2000 peak by a significant margin within a decade, well, then nobody would have believed you. And if one had said that we were going to live in a world where everybody would be ordering everything on their phone, and that smartphones would be an indispensable part of modern living, providing everything from making phone calls to payment methods to entertainment value to viewing shows, that it would contribute to a streaming economy, well, that would have been fanciful. And yet that's what we have today. So we have gone from disbelief to acceptance, and then we had We have now the belief that we are living in a golden age of technological development, and that is true. That is one of the other points about all major bull markets, that the promises that bull markets provide always, or almost always, come true. So now what the promises are that we are going to have a future for electric vehicles that is going to make the internal combustion engine obsolete, that we're going to have autonomous vehicles, and that that is going to create a revolution in terms of the economy. And that's probably true. But the question is, when it will it be delivered, and which companies are going to make money from it? And so these are the considerations that we're going to have. Then, of course, you have the revolution that we're having in artificial intelligence, in deep learning, and in algorithmic trading, but also algorithms in advertising, and algorithms in the search engine, and also algorithms being predictive about human behavior. We're also getting to a point where technology is becoming, and this is the true way that technology tends to evolve, is that as it evolves, it becomes invisible. And that is where cloud computing has really started to come through. Well, I remember back in 2011 clicking through the constituents of the NASDAQ composite and finding shares that were breaking up out of their long-term bases. And I remember the fact that I saw lots of them breaking out of bases, but I did not know what was the unifying characteristic behind them. And of course, I read an article then about 6 months later, and it was all relating to cloud computing. Well, then we knew then that cloud computing was going to be a big thing, and it has been. Well, the big question now with the NASDAQ is, we have had the big move on the upside because we had a very consistent advance in 2017, and now the trend is less consistent. We had I think it is reasonable to say that the pace of the advance picked up. Whether we want to call it acceleration, I think it is an exaggeration to say that the index accelerated higher, but certainly the pace of the advance picked up. Then we had a bigger pullback. We had the biggest pullback we'd seen since 2015. We had a failed upside break, and then it came back and hit a higher reaction low and bounced and moved on to new recovery highs. All new all-time highs, but now it is pulling back into the underlying trading range, and we haven't seen it do that in quite some time. If we look at all the ranges that we've seen since 2010, each one of the bigger ranges has been one above the last. That move that we saw in 2015 and early 2016 was an inconsistency, and then we went right back into this sequence of ranges, one above another, and now that's starting to change. Well, the kind of stop that is most appropriate in a rhythmically trending market is a midpoint danger line. And the index would be, if the top of this range is around 71, and well, let's look at it the exact high, 71.86, and the low is somewhere in the region of 61.64, well, then we have a 1,000-point range. Well, that would suggest that the middle of the range is going to be somewhere in the region of about 6,600. And the price today is at about 6,800. So it has not triggered a midpoint danger line stop. It could still bounce. But it really does need to bounce in order to, I think, reconfirm that we're in a demand-dominated environment. If, on the other hand, we start to see it coming back through the middle of this range, well, then that is going to raise the potential that it will come back down towards the lower side of the range. Well, that would be a very substantial pullback. And then we would be talking about a massive reaction against the prevailing uptrend, which is a type 2 trend-ending characteristic. Quite often after a type 2 top, we get a period of right-hand extension. And that could potentially occur below the trend mean. Well, then we would be talking about at least a medium-term top. So the question then would be whether we're going to see a reversion back towards the upper side of the most recent big range, which would be around 5,000, and that would also be the upper side of the, or that would be also coinciding with the peak from 1999. Well, the S&P 500 has not been the leader, and it has been subject to bigger pullbacks, lengthier consolidations, and each of the ranges has not been above the last in terms of this trend. We can compare the two, and we can definitely say that the S&P 500's range, or excuse me, trend, has not been as consistent as the Nasdaq's. And it has also now pulled back below the trend mean, and that because it didn't get some clear air above the previous peak, then that was a big failed down upside break. We've had now we've had follow through on the downside. It does increase the potential that it is going to come down and test the lower side of the range. Well, arguably, it is now at the lower side of the range. If we look at the daily chart, we're really not that far away from it. There's only about 60 to 100 points between where the price closed on Friday and the lower side, the lows that were put in February and in early April. So a lot of bad news has been priced in already. Now the question is this a medium-term correction, similar to what we saw in 2015 and 2016, or is it a top? Well, I'm of the opinion that when we look at the Dow gold ratio, that we're in a secular bull market. And we can also see that the Dow gold ratio has pulled back by approximately 2 points in the last few weeks because of this corrective phase that we've entered on Wall Street. Well, the most consistent thing about this chart is that there are approximately 35 years between the peaks, and that each one of the peaks is higher than the last. Well, that would suggest that the time to be really worried about a secular bear market starting on Wall Street is probably going to be somewhere in the early to mid 2030s. And that's still a minimum of 12 years from today. But that does not mean that we're not going to have the occasional crisis along the way, or that there aren't going to be the occasional recessions. Well, when we think about what is the likelihood of a recession, then the yield curve spread is currently around 26 basis points. So we've had a little bit of a rally over the course of the last while. Let me actually update this to the current date. And but I think the most important thing about the trend is that it's been going on for a while already. And this trend has not been broken by any kind of rally that we've seen in the spread over the course of the last few weeks. It does suggest that we are going to see an inverted yield curve at some point over the course of the next year, and then that offers a lead indicator for a future recession. That could be anything from 6 months to 18 months after the inversion. And high yield spreads have started to move higher in here this week. What I think is important about this measure is that government bond yields have been rising for a while, and they are now at approximately 3.2%. The fact is that high yield spreads have done nothing at all over the course of the last almost 20 months, but because the underlying has been rising, then the funding costs have been increasing. When we do see a breakout that is sustained, and we may potentially now be in the beginning of that for high yield spreads, well, that is going to be representative of tighter credit conditions. And tighter credit conditions are something that would generally, we could conclude, would appear before we have a recession, because they're one of the contributing factors to a recession. And the uptick that we've had in high yield spreads And the downtick that we've seen in the banking sector is suggestive of a tightening or tightening credit conditions. The S&P 500 banks index had been ranging for most of this year, but then it broke downwards in a rather dynamic manner in here this week. Well, again, this hasn't been the most consistent of trends. There have been times when it has been really quite inconsistent, over particularly in 2011 and in 2016. But on each of those occasions, it did not drop particularly far below the trend mean, and then it was able to push right back up and above the trend mean again later. So these are, I think, important points here, that the S&P 500 has certainly broken down, and excuse me, the banks index has broken down. Now the question is whether it is going to be able to bounce. But there is a broader point here, and it is that it's not simply that the S&P 500 banks index has been weak. European banks are starting to accelerate lower, and they've been ranging now for a decade, and they're coming back to the lower side of that range. The UK banking sector is also under pressure here and shares a very similar chart pattern, although perhaps not as developed on the downside as the European banks. The Australian banks have pulled back to the region of the lower side of the range. One of the things that is weighing on this particular sector is that there is, if I perhaps pull up one of the banks, there is talk of the government interfering with the franking on dividends, and that would knock off about 3% from the pension fund, or the dividends that pension funds are starting to or have been accumulating for years. That would also make the banking sector less attractive to invest in, and the sector has been rather weak. If we look at some of the individual constituents, then they are breaking down. So that it represents really quite a significant headwind for the Australian economy because the banks are doing less well. And the fact that you have the it's not simply that banks in individual countries are doing badly, but that systemically important financial institutions, which are constituted by this KBW Nasdaq Global Bank Index, are all trending lower. So this is, I think, representative of the fact that markets have been highly leveraged, and that it is only relatively small moves in the liquidity environment are having an outsized effect. They're most particularly having effect on the housing markets. So in home building, the US home building sector has been trending lower all year, and it is now very oversold. So there is the potential that we're going to get at least some pause and consolidation. Then if we have to look at individual home builders in the UK, because the home the construction index is almost 60% Reckitt Benckiser, which doesn't build homes, but this has been a significant break of trend that we've seen for some of the larger UK home builders. Then we also have the fact that in India, some of the home finance companies have also been pulling back rather sharply, but now they also have short-term oversold conditions. Well, this tells us that we are in an environment which has been bereft of any pressure on liquidity for a long time. Now we're starting to get liquidity pressures, and some companies are pulling back extraordinarily sharply. So, for example, in India, D1 Housing Finance is down from 700 to 200 in the course of about 6 or 7 weeks. So, it's definitely accelerating on the downside. Now, if it doesn't go to zero, well, then we know that an awful lot of bad news is already in the price. And what we're starting to see is evidence not just on a regional or a country basis, but of liquidity tightening in a number of different markets. And this is something that we have to pay attention to. If we look at, for example, the Bank of the Ozarks in the US, well, this has one of the clearest very significant breaks. There are a number of companies over the course of the last decade have used the abundant liquidity environment to make extraordinarily highly leveraged bids to become very large companies. And the Bank of the Ozarks did exactly that. They were really an insignificantly small company back in early 2009, which went out and bought and borrowed a pile of money, and that saw their loan book expand extraordinarily until about 2015, when the central bank started to raise interest rates. Now we have a very clearly completing type 3 top formation. And this share does look like it's in real trouble. Well, of course, the two other companies that have gone out and borrowed a pile of money and invested to try and break the status quo are Netflix. Well, Netflix accelerated. There is absolutely no question that this was an acceleration. We can make arguments all day about quite whether the Nasdaq accelerated or not, but definitely Netflix did accelerate. Then it pulled back, so you had the type 1 top, you had the type 2 trend ending with the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We've had this range below the top, and now it's breaking down. This is really looks like a very clear risk. I've been defining Netflix and Tesla as the canaries in the coal mine. And Tesla does appear to be going the other way. What I find particularly interesting about Tesla is that it was just about the only car company that went up last week. The one thing that Tesla has that the other car companies don't have is a battery factory. Now, we might be able to argue that it's Panasonic owns everything inside the battery factory, but Tesla has got the clearest route to abundant battery provision of any car company. And the rest of them all have to go out and spend a pile of money to build their battery factories because they're not going to be building diesel cars any longer. So these are significant issues here. Tesla has bounced from 250 in an emphatic fashion, and now the question is whether it can push back above $350 on a sustained basis. For the people that have been trading Tesla, they're probably thinking that if you want to short it, well, when it gets up to the upper side of the range is probably the best time. But what Tesla is doing now is something that we haven't seen in a while, and that is that it is exhibiting relative strength. Then we have to think about the kinds of companies that made big bets on doing better. So, for example, at Tata Motors is now accelerating lower. And part of the reason for that is because it is trying to compete on price. I just plugged this just because I've seen a number of these SUVs on the roads, and they're offering SUVs for a payment of $330 a month. So that's rather attractive, but it's in a rising interest rate environment where liquidity conditions are starting to tighten, that's obviously having a deleterious effect on the company's ability to continue to fund that kind of largesse. So that's what the kind of situation that we're looking at, that we're seeing liquidity conditions tightening just about everywhere. And that is contributing to a more volatile market environment. I think the fact that you do have companies like the Bank of the Ozarks and Netflix coming under pressure is part of the reason why the high yield spreads are starting to now move higher. Well, generally speaking, the way that we would anticipate looking at the performance of high yield spreads is that they have to be trending higher for a while before they really have an impact on the stock market. But credit does lead the stock market, so that is something that we also have to bear in mind. Well, then I think we do have to also keep an eye on some of these iconic shares. And Amazon is prone to these occasional accelerations and pullbacks to the trend mean. The defining characteristic of this trend is that when it pulls back to the trend mean, it bounces. There will be a lot of people are conditioned to think that when Amazon pulls back to the trend mean, it bounces. Well, we've had a pullback in the order of about 20% from the peak around 2000. So now, if it's going to bounce, this is about where it really does need to. It's the upper side of the underlying trading range, and it's also approximating the region of the trend mean. If Amazon can bounce here, well, then that is going to be a clear vote of confidence that the technology sector can continue to move higher. I think we have to also keep an eye on Facebook because Facebook was the leading decliner. It hit its peak in the summer and it broke downwards last week. Now, this had been a very consistent trend. Then it had a bigger pullback at the beginning of this year. Then it pushed on to new all-time highs and failed in a dramatic manner, and now it has broken down. So it has broken its progression of higher reaction lows, and we've had the massive reaction against the prevailing uptrend. So this is now leading on the downside. What I'm reminded of is Biogen. Because back in 2015, the biotech sector had been doing spectacularly well, and then Biogen pulled back very violently in July. Well, and it had already peaked well before that. Well, then if we look at the actual index itself, it wasn't until July that it peaked. So one of the major constituents of the index had peaked well in advance of the wider market, and that was before we had this big pullback. I think Facebook is the lead indicator here, and its underperformance is something that is, I think, setting off alarm bells from the perspective of the medium-term trend. Then, if we look at Google, Google had represented one of the most consistent trends in the world, and then it started to lose consistency at the beginning of this year. First, it rallied more than $100. On each of the other occasions, it had rallied $100 from the upper side of the underlying range and then pulled back by about $100 to find support at the top of the underlying range. But then it went through 1,000 and went quickly to 1,200. Then it gave up the $200 advance. So that was a bigger reaction than we'd seen in the course of the entire advance or the entire uptrend. Then it pushed on to new high ground and rallied by $100, so that was back to the original consistency, and now it has pulled back by $250. So this is now another much larger pullback than we'd seen previously. It is now trading below the trend mean by the widest margin we've seen in years. So now Google absolutely has to demonstrate that it can push back above the trend mean. If it were to take out the $1,000 level, I don't think people would be particular, well, we can't be particularly surprised. This is one of the most consistent trends in the world that has got a number of trend inconsistencies now. The best case scenario is that it ranges and allows, I think, valuations to contract somewhat when that the price goes sideways for a while and then start to resume its uptrend. But by the same token, that is the best case scenario. Well, what that is also suggesting to us is that this period of outperformance by the technology sector is starting to get or is starting to splinter. The social media sector and search have been among the best performing sectors over the course of this bull market, and now with interference by or I guess interference in the electoral process in the UK and in North America, that is starting to, or in the USA, has that is starting to shade the way that investors are regarding the prospects for these companies. Well, the other sector that did spectacularly well is the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, and that has the most textbook Type 2 top formation I've seen in years. Well, we had this wonderfully consistent advance from 2016 onwards. Considering that it was certainly doing well from the lows in 2008, but it took until 2016 to really convince people that things were doing well. Then we started to lose momentum at the beginning of this year, and then we had the failed break above 1400, and after that it had this sequence of lower highs, and then now we have this massive reaction against the prevailing uptrend. So this is a completing Type 2 top formation, but of course we know what the catalyzing event for it has been, and quite simply it's that the revelation that China has been interfering in the supply chain for the semiconductor sector. Well, that's a significant bearish catalyst for this index. It raises the worst case scenario that a lot of these companies that have been outsourcing production to China are going to have to migrate again. Well, that's also having a deleterious effect on the South Korean market. And there we also have evidence of a clear downtrend since the beginning of this year when it failed to sustain the move above 2500. Well, it has now given up all of the advance since 2017, and it is back at a potential area of support around 2000, but there has been significant trend deterioration here. And we have a pretty similar story with Taiwan. This is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and it is now back below the 10,000 level. Well, 10,000 had been a really incredible area of resistance for decades, and now it is trading back below this level in a very dynamic manner. Well, this is a big problem for the global semiconductors sector. So we've definitely seen a splintering in terms of the technology sector, and the technology sector has been one of the clearest leaders in this bull market. And there is, I think it is unrealistic to think that this problem is going to be solved quickly. When we think about the fact that China is getting increasingly more militant, that the country is basically on lockdown, that the only redeeming fact about the market is that they are showing increasingly overt support for the banking sector. In fact, right now, the Chinese banking sector is the best performer globally. What we're also starting to see here is that what I find particularly interesting about what's going on right now is that the last shall be first and the first shall be last, because it is in the semiconductor index that where people have been very highly involved, that a company like Nvidia, for example, had been the best performing share in 2016 and 2017, and now we have had a very, very clear break of trend. So this again looks like a completing Type 2 top formation. You had the loss of momentum this year, and then you're getting this massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So what that suggests to me is that the bull market in chips is over for a while. But on the other hand, Intel was one of the leading advancers on Friday. It's been pulling back, but not to nearly the same extent. So it's not all chips, but it's certainly the ones that had been doing most well, and particularly those that had been doing well as a result of Bitcoin mining. So AMD having accelerated higher at the in the sort of the second and third quarters is now accelerating lower, and it is coming back. I think one could only consider that it's starting to represent some value, having almost halved from the peak that we saw in the middle of this year. So we're definitely starting to see some of the bigger reactions that we've seen in years. That is definitely endangering some of the I think the trends that have been the basis for this bull market. But when we look at, for example, the cloud computing sector, well, it's back in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range, and it's trading below the trend mean. But it absolutely needs to bounce. I think that if it can bounce, it's probably going to be on the back of Amazon doing better. But this does look like a corrective phase that we're seeing in the technology sector, and not least because they're becoming the victims of this breakdown in the relationship that the West has with China, and most particularly because China is increasingly demonstrating that it is putting the interests of the government ahead of companies. And that isn't something that anyone had really been willing to contemplate until quite recently. So that's also affecting the Chinese companies, because the profit motivation is being subsumed by the government insisting on support. Or this is, I think this is the clearest evidence that China is moving towards a fascist state, that it's always been sort of 50-50 whether that was going to occur, but the use of the economy to further political goals, and the private sector as really just an arm of the government, well, that is something that is clearly coming straight out of the fascist playbook. Alibaba remains in a downtrend, albeit somewhat oversold. The fact that you have Tencent also accelerating lower, and of course, this also means that the MSCI Emerging Markets Index is accelerating lower. Well, what I've increasingly started to see is that emerging markets are trading at their widest discount relative to the MSCI world in years. But of course, that also means that China is trading at a significant discount. This is the time when I think it is most useful to break down exactly what we mean by emerging markets, because China is by far the largest emerging market. It is starting to offer support for its banking sector, but the index itself is still going lower. And we have to remember that the A-share index is primarily banks and financials. If we look at the B shares in Shenzhen, well, we're starting to see the short-term oversold conditions starting to be unwound, or at least the first evidence of some short-term steadying here. But this has been a substantial break below 1,000, and it's really going to require higher reaction lows on the next pullback, and then a sustained move back above 1,000 to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The Hang Seng is also coming down rather quickly, and when we look at the constituents of the index, well, we can see there that Tencent represents almost 9% of the index, but HSBC is the biggest constituent, and that is also suffering from the weakness that we're seeing in the global banking sector. HSBC now has higher, or excuse me, lower rally highs since 2009 and lower major reaction lows. So yes, there is certainly a short-term oversold condition, but it has an awful lot of work to do to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Well, this is none of this looks to be particularly encouraging. If we're starting to think about where are we in terms of the cycle, well, we've seen a lot of deterioration over the last few weeks. Now we're starting to see that the 10-year yield, I said earlier that it was around 3.2%. That's not obviously not correct. It's at 3.07% right now, and coming back in a rather dynamic manner. Well, 3% represents an area of potential support, but I think a lot of people will be looking at the moving average as a potential area of support for the yield. When we look at the 2-year, well, it has been rallying in a very persistent manner just about all year, but there's certainly an overbought condition, and that is a downside. I think it looks like a downside weekly key reversal on this chart. It certainly pulled back over the course of this week, and the high was on the 22nd. So this is definitely a downside key reversal. So that suggests that we are going to see the price come, or the yield come back down towards the trend mean. And that would be consistent with a medium-term correction on stock markets and the potential then for the yield to start to move higher again. Well, this is also starting to put upward pressure on the dollar. So what we have started to see is that we're seeing demand for traditional safe havens increase. The dollar index, this looks like a bullish consolidation following the break of the downtrend that persisted all the way through 2017. And really, a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to really question that hypothesis. Then, gold prices have been reasonably steady in here, but the most important thing that they've done over the course of the last while has been to break the downtrend that's been in evidence for most of this year. But the relative strength of the dollar has been something that has held it back in US dollar terms. Gold tends to do best when it is rallying in all currencies. Now, it was off its highs in here on Friday, and that suggests that we may be in for some consolidation. Then, if we look at what's going on in the yen, well, the yen has also been steady in here against the dollar. And it is now coming back to the region of the trend mean. When we look around the world, what we're starting to see evidence of, and I think we've looked at plenty of examples so far, is that its interest rate sensitive shares have been doing less well. And this is the biggest pullback we've seen on the Russell 2000 in since at least 2015. So if this is going to bounce, well, this would be a very convenient area for that to occur. It would represent some support coming through in the region of the lows from last year. Considering just how oversold markets are, I think that the balance of probabilities is that we are in for a bounce. But we've had significant trend, or I think inconsistencies start to creep in, that there is an argument now for this being a medium-term correction, and that the best-case scenario being that we're going to see plenty of ranging. Well, we do not yet have evidence of a recession on Wall Street or in the USA, but China is certainly tightening liquidity. Europe is at the end of its quantitative easing program, and the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates. And when we look at the total of central bank balance sheets, well, we're at are the it's at 19.63 trillion, and the peak was at approximately 21 trillion. So this is the biggest pullback we've seen in years. But a lot of people are thinking, well, golly, there's still a very liquidity-fueled environment. There's still an awful lot of cash sitting out there. But the reality is that because we've had a highly leveraged environment, because interest rates are low, then the sensitivity to small changes in interest rates has increased. And that's exactly why we're seeing the underperformance of interest rate sensitive markets. So what is it that is doing better in here? Well, the outperformance of the utility sector has been remarked upon by a lot of investors. Now, it was in negative territory over the course of the last few days, because I think the selling pressure has become more broad-based. Then if we look at the consumer staples sector, it had also been one of the clearest outperformers since the lows in 2009. Part of the reason that people were buying it was because of the growth of the global consumer, and the other reason was because of the bond-like characteristics that the companies have. Well, because of this hiccup that we're having with China and the underperformance of emerging market currencies, then the products of global companies are becoming more expensive for the average consumer in the emerging markets, so that is weighing on these companies. But they do have these global franchises with very reliable cash flows and then also dividend growth. Well, if you're worried about something and you're looking for the potential for cash flows to grow, well, then these companies still have the potential to deliver. Procter and Gamble, for example, had been doing rather well last week, and now it's a little bit overbought in the short term. Then, when we look at, for example, a number of these companies that are providing the kinds of staples that people just have, regardless of what the economic activity is, then we're starting to see relative strength in these types of companies. When, for example, we look at Unilever or Nestlé, well, then we're being provided with these types of companies that are definitely demonstrating relative strength at this particular time. Well, what that also tells us is that they are highly defensive, and that in times of stress, what people want are cash flows. So this is something that is helping to benefit these particular companies and the consumer sector generally. However, when we look at the Dividend Aristocrats ETF, it's been quite weak. It had the failed upside break just 5 weeks ago. Then it has pulled back to test the lower side of its underlying range. Well, part of the reason that it is underperforming is because it's also loaded with industrial kinds of companies. And then 3M, for example, has had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Then it had the period of right-hand extension and the first step below the peak. It encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean and broke down last week. This looks like a completing top formation. And that has been a weight on the fact that you're getting industrial type companies underperforming in a big way. Well, that's the kind of thing that is weighing on these Dividend Aristocrat indices. That in fact, it is the kinds of companies that have got clear, I think, exposure to the consumer are those that are exhibiting relative strength. So that's, I think, rather important. But it's not the kinds of companies that are benefiting from rich consumers. The luxury goods sector has been under pressure over the course of the last few months. And having accelerated higher, Hermès had a first step below the peak and now is trading below the trend mean. Then, when, for example, we look at Richemont in Switzerland, then it had also done rather well and very briefly moved to a new high and then had this very clear downside weekly key reversal, and now it has broken lower. So that is again not particularly, but I think when we also look at the sectors that have had some of the biggest selling pressure, then all of them have had something to do with China or Russia. If you think about the fact that social media was because of foreign interference in the electoral process, semiconductors is because of interference in the supply chain, and the luxury goods sector has been because of tightening the noose around capital flight in China, so demand has been pulling back. Then when we look at liquidity flows, well, then that's something else. That's because of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates and the sensitivity of highly leveraged businesses to that fact. Well, that also suggests that what happens in China is going to have a significant impact on the rest of the global economy. When we look at the Asia Dollar Index, the fact that the renminbi has been moving lower is putting downward pressure on all regional currencies. The renminbi does look like it is going to break higher. It hit a new low on Friday and rallied off the low briefly, and there is certainly an oversold condition, but China wants a weaker currency. The Indian rupee also remains under pressure, and it has stabilized over the course of the last few days, but this still looks like a consistent trend for the dollar on the upside. When we look at the Indonesian rupiah, well, then that's also looks like it is going to move higher from here. Well, we have a good example with the Turkish lira and the Argentine peso of times when you do get accelerating trends that then represent important lows for the market. What's quite interesting in here is that it's among the countries that have had the biggest selling pressure early in the year that we're now seeing evidence of relative strength starting to come through, because they've already had their big currency devaluations. Well, what that suggests is that for India, that this market does look like it's going to move lower from here, and that is going to set us up with a really attractive buying opportunity. But from the perspective of the Nifty, then it's probably a little early to be thinking that the selling pressure has ended just yet. And the bank index does tend to lead both on the upside and the downside. So we've definitely seen accelerating declines in some of the banks, but now the question is whether the lows are going to hold following the accelerated declines that we've seen, whereas some of the other banks have been particularly notable for their resilience. So ICICI Bank has been probably the best performer, and then the big question is how long is that likely to persist for if we get wider selling pressure in the market. Reliance Industries, having accelerated to get to that peak, has now unwound all of its overbought condition relative to the trend mean and is testing that psychological 1,000 rupee level. Tata Consultancy, which relies on which has the benefit of billing in dollars and spending rupees, has also unwound its rather large wide overextension relative to the trend mean. So I think there is certainly evidence of a corrective phase in India, but we're increasingly seeing accelerating declines. And generally speaking, that has represented buying opportunities more often than not for the Indian market. So it's not over yet, and the fact that the rupee remains weak is certainly a consideration, but we're certainly getting to a point where a lot of bad news is being priced in rather quickly for a significant number of shares. When we start to try to put all of this into the big picture, well, I do think that we're still in a secular bull market, but that we are in a period of time now where there is a re-rating going on, where some of the bullish hypotheses are being tested. That's most particularly evident within the technology sector. I continue to think that the biotech sector has got substantial potential to really change the way people live their lives, but there's no doubting that it has pulled back in a dynamic manner over the course of the last week and is at an area of potential support now. It's the big question that has to be tested, and we need to find an answer to, and there is no real sign yet of an answer being found, is in the relationship between the USA and China. I continue to think that this, the breaking of the status quo, the fact that yields have been rising, and that you're getting a push to the extremes on both the left and right, rather than the consensus building that has been a factor of the political, geopolitical and political lives of just about every country for the last 40 years. That's not a coincidence that you've had a contraction in yields over the same period of time, and that they're both starting to break at the same time as well. Then, one of the other things that people pay attention to in terms of predicting recessions is oil. And oil prices have dipped back into the underlying trading range, but they have bounced now from the region of the trend mean. Oil doesn't generally have the most consistent chart, but it was quite consistent until it broke below $80. It is oversold in the short term, and if it can continue to hold the region of the trend mean, well, then it may not be consistent on the upside, but we are likely to have, I think, more higher to lateral ranging. It's when oil prices surge higher that we have the threat of a recession. I think right now the epicenter of risk is China, but then you also have the fact that liquidity conditions are tightening just about everywhere, and that credit tends to lead the stock market. So we are definitely in a more corrective phase. This is a time to be thinking about, I think, opportunities where you see accelerations on the downside, but definitely we have a higher risk premium than we've had in quite some time. And what I think we do have is we're getting to a point where we need a bullish catalyst. And the bullish catalyst could be fiscal stimulus in China, it could be fiscal stimulus in Europe, or it could be an easing of tensions between the USA and China. These are all things that could potentially give us a significant bullish catalyst, but that they're not apparent just yet, and that the selling pressure remains intact. That would suggest that we can, I think, we should be prepared that there's going to be some surprises on the downside over the course of the next few weeks, but most particularly among those that have got the clearest evidence of type 2 top formations, that they need to push back above their respective trend means and not simply range below them. I think a lot of bad news has been priced in this week. We cannot be surprised if we get a bounce next week. But the bounce is going to have to not only hold, but be improved upon to really reignite bullish sentiment. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.